Today is January 15th, 2016, and this is Frances Laird with the Stockbridge Area Genealogical and Historical Society. Today, I'm at Silver Maples of Chelsea interviewing Larry Lindemer about his experiences growing up and living in the area as part of the Stockbridge Oral History Project. For the Capital Area District Library and the Stockbridge Area Genealogical Historical Society. Also with us is David Lindemer and Laura Walsh. So we'll start out with your early history. First, would you please state and spell your name?
Oh, Lawrence Lindemer. LawrenceLindemer.
Good. Where were you born?
Syracuse, New York.
In what year?
1921.
Well, what were your first memories of your childhood in Syracuse?
Growing up in Syracuse, we lived on Highland Avenue, which was a residential area. I went to Lincoln Grammar School, where the professor in charge was someone who was in charge of the school that my mother went to years before. Didn't have any particularly noteworthy experiences that I can recall at Lincoln. But then I went to Central High School and graduated from there when I was 16, and my parents thought I was too young for college, too immature, and sent me away to school at Taft in Watertown, Connecticut, for an additional year of high school. That was a very valuable experience for me. I enjoyed it, and I suspect that it may have accomplished some of the things that my folks had hoped for, if not all. And I enjoyed it, so much so that my younger brother George was sent there for 2 years, and he enjoyed it also.
Can you remember any experiences you had at Taft?
Well, my first experience, I was assigned to a single room at Taft, which was right next to the entrance into the apartment of Professor Daniel Fenton, and he was a cordial but a rigorous disciplinarian, so I avoided getting into any particular trouble that I can remember, and I enjoyed it. I made some friends there, including Bayard Sheldon, who was in the room across the hall from me and was from New Zealand. So it was my first experience with someone from a different part of the world. And we became very good friends, and much later in life, I made a trip to New Zealand and Spanky Sheldon, as we called him, hosted several things that made my trip much more valuable, and I enjoyed it a great deal. But my Syracuse experiences are without any, well, I was president of the student body of Syracuse Central High School, but that failed to make my resume afterwards. And I enjoyed my life in Syracuse, and in fact, I've had experiences that have caused me to hesitate. I'm certain during life, but basically, negative experiences have been noteworthy by their absence.
So, where did you go on to college?
I started college at Hamilton in Clinton, New York, and I had my freshman and sophomore years at Hamilton, and then I married Rebecca Gale, and who was from Cleveland, Ohio, and whom I met when her family occupied a summer cottage on Skaneateles Lake. And from that time on, I was not a free man. I was entranced by the lady, and we subsequently were married and had 50 very good years when she died.
So you finished up your college career in Michigan?
Yes. We moved to Michigan basically for financial reasons. We were married at the start of the war, and Becky's family had a farm that had been in their family for some generations, and which was vacant most of the year. So we could live at the farm, and I commuted to Ann Arbor and finished with the war intervening. I actually had intended, the timing was such, I had enlisted, the timing was such that I would be able to graduate before I went into the service. But on the farm, we had a resident farmer and a day farmer. And when they were both there, all of the farm work was theirs to attend to. But the day farmer got a wartime factory job which paid better than the farm did, and he left, and the resident farmer died, which left Becky and me with cows, sheep, hogs, chickens that had to be fed on a daily basis and attended to. So I dropped out of college completely. And when the time came for my entering the service, I had not graduated. I went into the service, into the Air Corps, and did not make an assignment as a pilot or...
Could I interrupt?
Yes.
And they'll scrub this. And if you go back to the farm, if you could name the farm, because this is Stockbridge history, and if you remember, name the resident farmer that
yes.
John. And maybe talk about how you commuted, whether you drove a car, whether you took the bus, and if you took the bus, where did it go?
Yeah.
And I think you took some vegetables in and sold them at the fraternity house and stuff. I think that
would be interesting.
If you could do that, and then you can start over with having to drop out of school for the war.
Well,
so you were left taking care of the animals.
Yes.
And that was the Westfall Farm, right?
Pardon?
The Westfall Farm?
The Westfall, Benjamin Westfall Farm mm-hmm. was the name of the farm, still is the name of the farm, and it still is in Becky's family's name. Mm-hmm. A lovely place to live and from which to commute.
So did you commute by car?
Yes.
Did you have a car?
Yes, I had a car mm-hmm. and I commuted by car. There were some times that I would commute by bus depending upon the schedule in Ann Arbor. Frequently I couldn't commute by bus and make all of the class assignments in Ann Arbor. So when I couldn't commute by bus, I commuted by car. And
where did you get the bus?
The bus went right by the door on between Stockbridge and Gregory. So it was, and you stood out by the side of the road knowing approximately when the bus would come by and flag it down, and it would take you into Ann Arbor. It went from Stockbridge to Gregory to Pinckney to Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. And it worked pretty well. But I could not take care of animals on the farm and pursue the balance of my studies. So when I got in the service, I communicated with the University of Michigan, and I had a sufficient record in every class that the professor felt he could give me a passing grade, and that's all I needed was a passing grade, with the exception of Spanish American history. And I was informed that it was a lecture course, and the professor couldn't remember whether I ever attended a lecture or not, because it was that kind of of a situation. So I had to take an examination in Spanish American history. And I thought, well, I'll go to the library. I was stationed at that time when the news came that you have to take the exam in Grand Forks, North Dakota, at the University of North Dakota. And much to my disappointment, the University of North Dakota in its library had not one source of information on Spanish American history. It obviously wasn't taught there. So I took an examination in Spanish American history, and when the examination came and I took it, I knew that I had to rely on some great good fortune for a passing grade. And I figured that the professor either was motivated by the Christmas spirit or else was intoxicated when he marked my paper, because there is no way that I deserved to pass. But he gave me a D, which was all I needed, and for which I thanked him forever. And later on, when I became a regent of the University of Michigan, he had passed away. I sort of assumed he didn't want to face the results of his beneficial to me activities. But anyway, I got through on that basis, and then it wasn't until after the war that I applied to the law school and was admitted, and succeeded in finishing up, and passed my bar exam, and started practicing in Stockbridge, which did not have an attorney within 15 or 20 miles.
And, so why did you choose Stockbridge to make your home?
We're going to take a short break and get right into that.
Okay.
I thought you might want...
During that period of time after the day laborer left, the day laborer's name was Lloyd Hicks. The resident farmer was Floyd Durkee, and Floyd Durkee died. So Becky and I were left with the animals that needed daily care and so forth, so that I had to drop out of Michigan and take care of that. And then my induction time came, and I went into the service.
You want to mention the toppings?
Oh, yes. The next door neighbor to the farm in Stockbridge was Norm Topping, and he was not only a friend but a lifesaver, because he knew what to do. He was a lifelong farmer, and he was absolutely wonderful in giving me guidance and help and all things of that nature. And we got through until my induction came, and I went into the service, into the Air Corps. I did not attain pilot station. I was a ground officer. I wasn't a ground officer at the beginning, but I was sent to officer candidate school and graduated from that and became a ground officer in the Air Corps. Never went overseas. I was on an overseas shipment to the Orient when Japan surrendered. Coincidentally, my brother was on an overseas shipment to China when the war ended. So both of us were on overseas shipments, and I was packed, including my trunk for overseas shipment when the war ended. So we both, brother and I, anticipated that we would be in the Orient somewhere, and were spared that experience. We didn't go.
That was lucky.
Yeah.
What were your first memories of Stockbridge?
Well, in the farm, the Benjamin Westfall farm, the farmhouse and the start of the farming operation was several generations old, and it was really a lovely place to live. The neighbors, the Toppings, and everybody else during our period of trial there could not have been more helpful and instructive than they were, and somehow or other we got through. I was very lucky to have a strongly supportive wife, and it was just as good an experience as all of the negative factors would have allowed. Mm-hmm. And I'm forever grateful for that.
So how did you see the community through your work as a lawyer?
Well, I had, when I was in the service, I had become acquainted with the legal opportunities as a lawyer, just by osmosis, I suppose. And Dick Foster, who was then the operational head of a firm in Lansing was in, it had to be Washington.
Excuse me, you're moving ahead a little bit. You became interested in law profession in the service.
Yes.
You finished law school, but she's talking about moving into the Stockbridge from Unadilla Township, I don't know when you did that, but then because you moved the house up in 46, the Red Barn.
The Red Barn, I don't remember the date.
But you moved into Ingham County for a particular reason, and that was when you were probably in law school and almost finished, I would think. But I was confusing you. The Dick Foster thing doesn't happen for several more years when we do come back from Washington.
Oh, but
first you're coming into Stockbridge setting up your own practice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I did. I built a small building in downtown Stockbridge as a law office. Mm-hmm. And I had some business. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised that I was accepted within the community, Sid Beckwith was one of my, well, outside of family, Sid Beckwith was my closest friend in Stockbridge. And we did some traveling together. I remember a trip that we made to Colorado. And
we'll let this ring. And do you want to talk about, maybe you don't, but didn't some folks sort of guarantee you something to get established in the law practice if you would stay in Stockbridge?
Nobody guaranteed me anything.
No, I.
But I had made friends, and there was a hearing scheduled by the United States Department of Agriculture on milk providers, basically on farmers who had their own source of supply and were providing milk, both pasteurized and unpasteurized, for sale. And there was a federal hearing on a movement by the Michigan Milk Producers Association to change some of the federal rules. And my neighbor Norm Topping came down and we talked about it, and he said, he asked if I would be willing to represent them in the federal hearing. And obviously I had never represented anybody in a federal hearing before, so I said yes. And to make a long story short, we were successful in the federal hearing in avoiding some of the threats that the private dairy farmers felt that they faced if the federal rules were changed. And we succeeded. And with that success, the Michigan Milk Producers Association, who had been on the other side in that case, called me and wanted to have a meeting. And in that meeting offered me a job as their general counsel.
Ah.
So I checked with everyone, as I recall, of my 42 individual farmer clients as to whether or not they would think it was treasonable for me to work for the Michigan Milk Producers Association, and they said no, they didn't, and they thought it would be helpful to patching up the relationship between the individual farmers and the association if I did. So I did, and we did establish a relationship that frankly lasts until today, it was beneficial to the farmers. It was beneficial to Michigan Milk, and it was a good resolution to what had appeared to be a sticky problem. So that problem went away, and as far as I know, well, the firm that I eventually was asked to join in Lansing still to this day represents the Michigan Milk Producers Association. So we had a pretty solid amicable solution to the problems that threatened. And I was always very grateful for that.
What other issues did your practice in Stockbridge involve? I mean, what sort of work did you have to do for people?
Well, it varied. People bought and sold land, and they needed deeds drawn. People sold land on land contracts, and they required those to be developed. And it was nothing of a startling nature, but it was good, and it was done in a pleasant atmosphere. I'm certain, and I can think of one family that was a large farming family who were trying to do some things, and I was hired by their neighbors to try to prevent it. And we were able to prevent it, and that sort of solidified my good relationship with a lot of the farmers in the area.
So, what other ways did you interact in the community and contribute to the community? I know you sang in the choir.
Well, yes, I sang in the
in the Presbyterian
in
Church.
The Presbyterian Church choir. I remember Franny. It came to my attention that the farm that your dad purchased was for sale, and he had been interested in it for some period, but had not known that it was on the market. And it was not a privileged communication to me, but the fact that it was for sale, I learned about before your father did. And I called him and said, did you know? And I can't remember what the name of the farm was before that. But anyway, that farm was for sale. And he said no, he didn't, and he moved right then and there and ended up buying it.
So we can thank you for that.
and that was a very good thing for the community and for your family, well, I don't think it had any downside at all as I think back of it.
So you had a lot of experiences in the wider world in politics. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you got started?
I was always interested in politics. My maternal grandfather had been interested in it, and in New York State, and so I went at that time. The farm was in Livingston County, so I was a resident of Livingston County. And I went to a county convention, and they were choosing delegates to a state convention, and one of the other representatives of our area suggested that I do that, run for delegate to the state convention. So I thought I had nothing to lose, and I ran and was successful. And so I was bitten by the political activity bug, and I enjoyed it, and had some good friends. It eventually developed that when I became Republican state chairman, the Democratic state chairman was Neil Stabler of Ann Arbor. And Neil and I became acquainted and found that we had a lot of things in common and enjoyed each other's company. So we started meeting for lunch every other month or so to discuss some problems that we thought we might be able to work together in resolving, and we did. We we got some things done that might not have been done otherwise, that we concluded, and I guess they were not things of major import, but I think basically even looking back over this long period of time, I think they were good things, mm-hmm. and we were able to get some things accomplished on a bipartisan basis that if we had not established a personal relationship would not have happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm pleased to be in a situation to recall that, because it worked. Not that either of us, we just found areas of compromise where others had not found areas of compromise that allowed us to suggest joint activities, and I think it was a good thing to
very rare today.
I suspect from what I read that it doesn't happen with great frequency, and our lunches together were not publicly noted. The fact that we were meeting and talking and stuff was not something that very many people, we weren't secretive about it, but when Neil and I would meet for lunch at MSU, nobody knew who the heck we were, and so we could talk and stuff, and I think we got a few things of lesser importance resolved through that activity.
When you went to Washington to work, that was in the Hoover Institute?
It was called the Hoover Commission.
The Hoover Commission.
President.
Why don't you hang on just a sec for the clock?
Okay.
It's going to bang twice. For the clock. Want any water?
So what was the Hoover Commission exactly, and what did you do in that?
Harry Truman succeeded in getting Herbert Hoover to head a commission on organization of the executive branch of the government. And one of the members of that commission was United States Senator Homer Ferguson. And David Kendall, a lawyer in Jackson, with whom I'd had a couple of legal experiences, was a friend of Homer Ferguson, and I was out in the cold, sort of, as to what to do next. And David Kendall suggested to Homer Ferguson that I might be of help to him. He had the power to appoint an assistant on the Hoover Commission. And so he interviewed me. Becky and I drove to Ferguson's home in, my recollection is it was in Grosse Pointe, and met with Senator Ferguson and his wife, and he decided to hire me as his assistant, and he wanted me to go to Washington, where he and Mrs. Ferguson had an apartment, and get started on work on the Hoover Commission. And so the Fergusons let us live in their apartment in Washington for a period of a few months, which was a great accommodation, and enabled Becky and me to find an apartment in the District of Columbia where we could live.
Oh, I'm sorry, she's going to pause it.
That was located near the apartment that we had, and I saw these pictures and I fell in love with them, and Becky was tentative about it, to put it delicately, I hope. And
I suggest we go. I don't know where he is. See.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And anyway,
let's get back to the Hoover Commission and your time in
yes.
in Washington.
Yeah. Okay. Dave Kendall got in touch with Senator Ferguson, recommended that if he needed help, perhaps he would could use me, and so. Senator Ferguson called and suggested that I come to Detroit or Grosse Pointe, which is where I believe they lived at that time, for an interview. And so Becky and I did. We went in to meet the Fergusons at their apartment in Detroit, and we hit it off. I enjoyed them, and they enjoyed Becky, so I got hired. And anyway, it turned out to be a very happy relationship until and I went, we moved to Washington, and we lived in the Ferguson's apartment until we found one of our own, and which was a very cordial thing for them to have done, and it worked. Anyway, I during the commission's activities, Ferguson was appointed ambassador to the Philippines, and I didn't know what was going to happen. His replacement was United States Senator from one of the New England states. I'm having difficulty remembering just which one. And he wanted his own assistant. So I was out of a position, and I was out of a position until Mr. Hoover asked me if I would work directly for him, and I said, of course, I would be delighted to do that. And we had a very pleasant relationship. At one point, Mr. Hoover invited Becky and the two boys and me to dinner at his apartment in Washington, and that was a very delightful experience, and something that I think both David and Larry, as well as I, remember with pleasure. And I am in possession of a letter from, while this was going on, Dick Foster of the Foster firm in Lansing had made contact with me and inquired as to whether or not I would be interested in joining his firm. And as a name partner, and I said I was. And when I came in, when the time came anyway, I was asked to join the firm, and my name was a part of the firm name.
Did he know you from your days in the legislature before you went to Washington?
I think we had known each other peripherally, but he had talked with me, and so anyway, I joined the firm, and then later on, when Governor Milliken, Governor Milliken had asked me to run as his lieutenant governor candidate, they were paying the lieutenant governor at that time a sum of money that was considerably less than I was earning. And so I talked with him, but decided that I should continue providing for my family, and did. And
yes, that's interesting. Very interesting.
Stop it.
Do you need a drink of water?
No.
Could you tell us a little bit about your experience running for the legislature?
Yes. The legislator from our district was Jacob Sheppers of East Lansing. And he was... I never ran against Jacob Sheppers because I respected him, but I ran trying to seek that office as a start on politics. And so I, having absolutely nothing to lose, I really campaigned. And Jacob Sheppers didn't really campaign. He thought it was a waste of his time. Not that he'd lose, but that he'd win whether he campaigned or not. But strangely enough, I beat him by 7 votes in the primary, and I learned later that Sheppers came down to Stockbridge. Am I getting this right? And, he came down to Stockbridge and talked with a close friend of his, Will Wright, of Stockbridge, about me. He wanted to get Wright's appraisal of things, I guess. And his inquiry was headed to a decision as to whether he would ask for a recount with just a 7-vote loss. I am not privy to that discussion, but anyway, Will Wright lived across the street from Becky and me, and we had a very pleasant relationship. And evidently, Sheppers came down and talked to Wright. And after talking to Wright, he decided not to ask for a recount. And so I was successful. And I had asked John McCune of East Lansing, with whom I became acquainted through the Young Republicans, to be my campaign manager when I ran against Sheppers. And McCune had agreed to do that. And to everybody's surprise, I won. 2 years later, McCune decided that he would rather have the position. So he ran from East Lansing, and I ran from Stockbridge. And my recollection is that I carried a lot of the area outside of Stockbridge. But McCune's father was minister of the largest church in East Lansing. And McCune decided to run against me and beat me. I don't remember what the margin was, but he won that election. It was sort of interesting. I mean, John evidently had developed a thought process that eliminated some things that I thought were valuable. But anyway, John ran against me and defeated me. So I was without a job. I still had my law office in Stockbridge and my law practice there. And we were able to survive. I wasn't buying any new cars or anything of that nature, but we were able to meet all our obligations and make a little bit of security for the firm.
Okay, so that takes you up to where you said you were out in the cold and David Kendall recommended you to Ferguson. And okay. We've already been through the Hoover Commission.
Okay.
So...
Yeah.
So we're past... We're past.
We're back to where Franny is. I don't know if you're wrapping up or you've... feel you've done the political, right, Fran?
Well, you had one more important job, and that was as a regent at the University of Michigan.
Yes.
And that must have been quite
interesting. When I was in the House of Representatives, Bill Milliken was in the State Senate, and we became... political and personal friends. I regard him to this day as one of the most highly principled people in politics that I have known. Just a great guy. And
Did he recommend you for the position on the Board of Regents?
Well, he appointed me.
He appointed you.
He appointed me. He was governor. He had asked me to run as lieutenant governor, and I had not done that. And Bill had selected Jim Damon of Oakland County as his partner as his lieutenant governor candidate.
Okay, he appointed you to fill a vacancy on the regent board? On the board?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long was your term as a regent?
Well, I was on the Board of Regents for 7 years. It was an 8-year term, but he then appointed me to the Supreme Court of Michigan, and so I had to resign as a regent of the university, but it was it was something that didn't take very many second thoughts. I had just had a great many incidental changes in direction, which were not planned in advance, but all of which seemed to worked out very well for my family and me, and I think it's true that one of the things was being invited to Mr. Hoover's. Incidentally, I call him Mr. Hoover because that's what he asked me to call him. I call him Mr. President, and he said, Larry, I call me Mr. Hoover. And so that's what I did. And
so you really had a touch with history.
Well, I had a, yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. But he was a very delightful person to work for, and I treasure some letters. Mr. Hoover, well, when I went back when John McCune defeated me, and I went back to the private, to my practice, I've lost track. What?
Yeah, we've covered back to the practice.
Good.
Okay.
Good. Well, maybe we should wind this interview up now. It sounds as if you've had a very rich and interesting life. What were the happiest times of your life, do you think?
Pardon?
What were the happiest times of your life? The things that gave you most satisfaction?
Well, I've not had serious negative aspects that come to mind. My relationships with Becky were very good. My family all became extremely fond of her, and we had a very happy time. Becky and I were traveling in Florida and ran into, quite by accident, Gene and Ross Backus, whom I had known through politics. When I was Republican state chairman, Gene Backus from Owosso was a member of the Republican State Central Committee. So we were acquainted. And then when we were in Florida, somewhere in Florida, quite by accident, Becky and I ran into Gene and Ross Backus. Subsequently, Becky died and Ross Backus died. And I was active in AAA and became chairman of the board of the American Automobile Association with headquarters in Orlando, Florida. And so we moved to Florida, or wait a minute. Gene's home. Well, Ross died. Becky died. I was in Florida then as chairman of AAA, and thought that I knew that Ross had died, and I didn't know how far Avon Park was from Orlando. I had a rough idea. Anyway, I called Gene Backus in Avon Park, which was where she and Ross had moved from Owosso to Avon Park when he bought a car dealership in Sebring, Florida, which was just 10 miles from Avon Park. And so anyway, I called Jean, and she said, "Why didn't you come down for dinner?" And you know what that does for a man. He accepts dinner invitations if he's single. And I did, and that developed over a period of another year or 15 months into another marriage. Gene and I were married 18 years when she died, so I've been lucky far beyond my just deserts, I know, and have no complaints about the extreme good fortune I've had.
Good. Well, this has been a wonderful life history that you've given us, and thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Franny, and In your dad's name, I can't tell you how pleased I am that this interview has been conducted by you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.